Full Service Radio is supported by Compass, the future of real estate in the Metro DC area and beyond. Discover more at compass.com.
You're tuned into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hey everyone, welcome to Lunch Agenda on Full Service Radio. We're broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in DC, and I'm your hardworking host, Kiko Bourne. We recently closed up a series highlighting underappreciated food jobs, and last week we had a special pre-election primer for food-interested voters. So today I'm excited to kick off our new series, and I'm calling it Big Food Stars. I'm trying to turn my own preconceived notions about the food system upside down. So what I mean by that is my food education has led me to turn a skeptical eye on big corporations who grow, manufacture, retail, or really do anything in food. Remember the Monsanto headline from a couple weeks ago? The list goes on about how big businesses as a group are doing it wrong. So, you know, in general, we hear about how they're prioritizing profit over responsible practices, often because they have short shareholders to answer to. We hear about how they're underpaying workers who therefore can't even afford to purchase the food that they stock on grocery shelves. We hear about how they're loading livestock into cages too small to move around in. But it's easy to shoot arrows at big targets, right? So with this new series, I hope to surprise all of us who are predisposed to assume the worst about big companies. I'm going to be interviewing leaders who are pushing forward big food businesses in ways I consider innovative and in ways that offer positive social externalities.
This is a really exciting moment right now because business is coming to see itself as a corporate citizen. It's coming to see that it has a role to play in solving global social problems, and not by forking over profits for a cause, but by building profitable solutions into the goods and services that we deliver. Nowhere is there greater opportunity to do that than with today's food companies.
That's Nancy Roman, the CEO of Partnership for a Healthier America, which is the nonprofit started by Michelle Obama to end childhood obesity. And I recorded that, if you can't tell, the audio was not professional, but that was from me sitting at the big partnership summit they hold every year. And I really consider that organization to be square one for big food business social impact. So today I've asked Amaris Bradley, who's the Senior Director of Partnerships at Partnership for a Healthier America, I'm going to call it PHA from now on, and a registered dietitian, to tackle this topic with me. Hello, Amaris. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I've wanted to for a long time. So Amaris joined PHA in May of 2014 and brings with her nearly 10 years experience as a nutrition communications professional. Amaris and I will be discussing how it works for big companies to make these types of commitments towards public health through their food products. And in order to illustrate the model, I've also asked Jeff Leonard, who's Vice President of Strategic Industry Initiatives for the National Association of Convenience Stores, which I'll call NACS today, to join us in studio. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Jeff oversees the association's Refresh initiative to lead positive change in how convenience retailers sell food and serve their communities. And I should mention, Jeff is no novice to the radio booth. He co-hosts his own podcast about convenience stores. It's called Convenience Matters, and I invite you all to check it out.
Thank you.
So before we dive in, as usual, we'll kick off today's episode with some Kiko's food news. Headline one, I want to follow up on last week's episode, which was a precursor to the big vote on Tuesday in D.C., to just report back something that kind of surprised me, which is that voters approved Initiative 77 here in D.C., which was the contentious ballot measure to increase the minimum wage for tipped workers. I'm, to this day, you know, I didn't realize how important my vote was on this issue, and it was surprisingly close. It was, I think, it passed by 55% of the vote, and I just want to say that what a reminder of how our votes matter. So we'll see how the DC Council treats that, as they need to approve it for it to go into effect. Moving on, nationally, meal kit companies like Blue Apron and Plated are invading grocery stores in search of new customers. As of 2017, Blue Apron dominated the $4.65 billion meal kit market with over 40% of the market share. But with an IPO that fell short of expectations, the company has begun selling their kits in more than 60 Costco locations, with recipes rotating monthly. And they're not alone. So there are other meal kit companies going into grocery stores. Last summer, grocery chain Albertsons acquired Plated for $300 million, and some Plated kits are already available in Safeway and Albertsons stores. And similarly, in March, Walmart announced it would roll out its in-store meal kit nationwide. So it's just interesting for me to see these different grocery models evolving as the consumer landscape changes. Finally, a Wall Street Journal article entitled "Size Becomes a Handicap for Global Food Giants" reported on how companies like Nestle and Unilever are struggling to adapt to the food industry's new trends. I quote, "Giant companies, by their nature, will struggle to respond to the rapid shift in tastes towards fresher, healthier, and smaller brands." The article goes on to talk about some of the challenges for, you know, the big ships that giant food companies are to re-steer while moving. And I think this is a perfect transition, actually, back to the topic of today's episode, because I would argue that just as big food companies can adapt to product trends, they're also potentially less nimble in adopting socially responsible practices, as that becomes more and more part of the conversation as a responsibility of business. So we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back from the break, we'll dive into mechanisms that help big companies do the right thing. So stay tuned.
And the music you're hearing on the break is by a producer named Rasir. He's the winner of the BB1 Beat Tournament. So as part of that, we'll be listening to his music all week on Full Service Radio. Young kid out of Baltimore, soundcloud.com/Rasir, R-A-S-I-I-R, and the song is called Zen. We'll be right back. Service Radio is supported by Compass. Discover Compass, America's first modern real estate company. By pairing the industry's top agents with technology, Compass delivers an incomparable client experience from the first-time buyer to the seasoned seller. Visit them today in DC, Maryland, and Virginia, or navigate compass.com day or night.
Full Service Radio. We're back. I'm Kiko Bourne. This is Lunch Agenda Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in DC. And before diving in with our guests, Amaris and Jeff, today, I want to take a minute and ask our listeners to put on your brainstorm caps. So I know it's easy to generalize about, quote, big food as a category. And with this series on big food stars that I've kicked off today, I'm trying to surprise not only myself, but all of you. And I know I'm not going to find all of the best examples of companies doing it right, so I'd love to hear from you. If you know about good work being done by big companies to impact how food is grown, made, purchased, served, consumed, please let me know over the next 2 weeks. You can DM me at KikoBuff on Instagram. You can contact me via my website, kikosfoodnews.com. I really need your help to minimize my blind spots, so please shout out, and I could work that company into an upcoming episode. So, Partnership for Healthier America. Amaris, I want to play a quick clip from the summit just that I think encapsulates the approach, and then I'll ask you to explain to listeners really how you work with big companies.
Sounds good.
The Partnership for a Healthier America wants all children, especially those at highest risk, to grow up healthier, free from obesity and chronic conditions like diabetes and heart disease. To meet that goal, PHA is building an expanding network of partners, 225 and counting. partners from wholesale to retail to the grassroots, all committed to bringing lasting, systemic changes that improve the food supply and increase physical activity. PHA helps partners set clear goals and then holds them accountable by verifying results. Partners get access to PHA expertise, engagement with other partners, and recognition for keeping their commitments. And that can give a competitive edge and add to the bottom line. Just look at the numbers. In the last few years, 16 of the nation's top food brands have cut 6 trillion calories from their products. PHA partner Dannon cut the sugar content in 78% of its products, including 100% of products intended for children.
So, Amaris, let's talk about some of the examples of big food companies helping society through their core operations. What are some of the huge companies that have made changes because of the partnerships they have with you all?
Sure. So a couple were just mentioned in the clip that you shared. Another one would be a big retailer most people are familiar with, Walmart. So talking about big food, Walmart has its own private label product line, as you may know. And as part of their commitment with PHA, they committed to reformulating their private label to drop the sodium in their products, the added sugar in their products, and ultimately make the food products that are on the shelves that people purchase inherently healthier. So that's the type of work that we do with companies like Walmart, like Dannon, yeah. and like convenience stores across the country.
And how does it work? Do they come to you and say, we need help? Or do you go to them and say, you need help? You know, how do those relationships happen?
It's a little bit of both. Uh-huh. We get approached by companies, and then we seek out companies that don't necessarily have health on their radar. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, you know, on average, PHA, you know, for every 10 conversations we have with companies, that might result in one partnership. And I'll say also that obviously that's a testament to, hopefully, the rigor that we and the standard that we hold these companies to.
Right.
So, you know, for folks listening mm-hmm. in, PHA is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. You know, we were founded by some of the, you know, top leading health and wellness experts in the country. So we are, you know, kind of have one foot in public health and one foot in the private sector as far as bridging these two together to make partnerships that will truly impact our mission, which is, as the clip stated, to help make, you know, better food, more movement a reality for everyone in this mm-hmm. country. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, the partnerships that we broker, they're legally binding agreements. And once we either find a good match, whether it's someone reaching out to us or us reaching out to a prospect, we negotiate those partnerships one-on-one, because as you can imagine, what Walmart can do is going to be really different than what Bird's Eye can do, or what Nike can do, et cetera.
What did Bird's Eye do?
Bird's Eye was also a reformulation play.
And tell the listeners what Bird's Eye is in case they don't
yes,
know.
Yes, so Bird's Eye is a frozen vegetable company, so pretty popular in the frozen food aisle, you know, frozen foods and veggies are a really great product because they're often more economical than fresh. But, you know, as far as processing goes, they're picked at their peak, flash frozen. So it's a great nutrient-dense option for a lot of different lifestyles. So as part of that, Bird's Eye also made sure through their commitment to reformulate product. So a number of their products that might not just be straight, you know, broccoli, but have some sauces or other products to include whole grains, to drop the sodium or added fat, saturated fat, and things like that.
Nice. And you're asking these companies to take sodium, saturated fat, sugar out of their products while these companies have probably often science departments who know that humans want that stuff. Mm-hmm. Why do they make the commitment? You know, how do you convince them that it's worthwhile to do this?
So this is where we come in as far as we as citizens voting with our wallets.
Yeah.
So the great thing about the landscape right now is that companies are recognizing that all of us are really creating that demand for healthier options. We're asking for those healthier options. We're asking for, you know, cleaner labels. We're asking for healthier options everywhere that we shop. And so companies, and particularly the bigger players, are really feeling the pressure to adapt, adjust, and make changes to their portfolio to meet that demand and to also survive. So I, you know, kind of applaud us, and I encourage all, you know, the listeners to keep up that pressure. That makes, you know, our work a little bit easier. It's a sweeter sell because we have the backing of a lot of that purchasing power to help companies make those changes.
And I've heard you all talk about this notion of health by stealth. What is that approach?
So, you know, this might be familiar to some listening in, but there are often times, you know, we can be fickle. Sometimes we say we want healthier options, but sometimes our actions are, you know, reflect something differently. So there are times when we work with these companies to tweak their specific products to cut the sodium or added sugar, and we don't tell anyone that we've done that. You know, we don't announce it or, you know, shout it from the rooftops. We let it lie in the marketplace.
Interesting.
And then once we know, and once the company is comfortable, you know, knowing that sales are remaining stable, they'll go out publicly and say, hey, that product that you've always loved, it's now healthier because we did XYZ. So it's a matter of kind of protecting and managing kind of the fickle nature of consumers and what we say we want and what we actually buy and all of that.
And what does success look like? You know, where is your end point? What is your target?
Healthier products, accessible, affordable to everyone. Obviously, we have some physical activity goals also, which is to make sure that there are safe places to be active for all. But with our approach, which is really to leverage the power of the private sector, you know, we know that there are so many great organizations doing phenomenal work on the ground, and it's a huge issue we're trying to tackle as far as eliminating, you know, diet-related chronic disease in the next generation tall order. So we need everyone on board, and that includes big food, you know, so yeah.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Exactly.
But hopefully will happen in our lifetime.
Yeah.
I mean, child obesity rates are rising still, right?
So we keep a close eye on where the data is trending. And we've seen among some age groups an increase, which is naturally really concerning and definitely keeps us energized for the work that we do. But we have been encouraged that among some of the younger age groups, that there is movement in the positive direction. Though that youngest demographic is not kind of creeping into that that space where, you know, you are reaching that obese range or overweight range. And so what that's telling us is we are doing a really good job with kids at a younger age, instilling those healthier behaviors and patterns. But as they age through the life cycle, through, you know, school, high school, college, working adult, there are still gaps. And something is happening that the environment is not conducive. You know, external factors are not allowing that individual to make the healthy choice.
Right, the healthy choice, the easy choice. I was inspired to learn about your Bright Horizons work. You know, that's for those who don't have little ones. I wouldn't have known what Bright Horizons was 2 years ago, but they're a national chain of really, you know, leading early child care centers, and it's neat that you're intervening right at the first time that kids are leaving their own home. So, you know, you mentioned access, you know, that success looks like affordable, healthy food that's accessible. And I think that's actually a great moment to bring Jeff into the conversation, because something that I've learned also from Partnership for Healthier America is how many Americans access their food at convenience stores. And so, you know, I don't think that many of us hold convenience stores up as this pinnacle of health in our minds traditionally, but I'm, you know, here to learn from Jeff about what they're doing, and I, before Jeff, you start talking, I did take one quick clip about successes already with convenience stores that I'd like to play for the listeners.
Food distributors are now offering and promoting healthier foods to more than 75,000 convenience stores. The Quick Trip chain saw a 5.5% increase in fresh produce sales in its first year as a PHA partner.
So, Jeff, can you just help us understand the role of the National Association of Convenience Stores? Are all convenience stores part of that? Or, you know, who, which ones are or aren't? And what do you do with that organization?
Oh, I wish they all were members. We probably have about a third of the convenience stores in the country represented by stores, by companies. But there are about 155,000 convenience stores in the country. It's about 34% of retail. And honestly, everybody at retail sells food. If you go to a Home improvement store.
Yes.
If you go to a place that sells office supplies, if you go to a place that sells crafts, they are selling snacks or selling drinks.
And it's usually quite the type of food that we are not trying to have them sell.
Well, the main thing is, and like the day before the PHA conference, I read something in a magazine I thought was fascinating. And it really, I thought it was a different way of thinking about things, or not, maybe not that different. But somebody's quote was, "I only eat food that rots." Meaning that that is the healthy food.
Yeah.
Now, from the retail perspective, whether you're a home improvement store or whether you're a convenience store, that's terrifying because that means your entire inventory is potentially rotting from the time through distribution till the time you're able to sell it. And so I think one of the things is it's not necessarily kale or something bad. And how do you find those things in between? It could be frozen as long as there's not added sodium or sugars. It could be some other packaged items. But with our industry, it's really about learning from people at PHA about what is the proper way to sell items and what is the proper way to promote items, and that it will take time because if you are a traditional convenience store, like you were just saying, and you start having a produce stand, it's going to take some time, and there's going to be some rot that will take place. And how do you manage that until you know it will succeed? Those are all the challenges that I think any small store is facing.
I have to say, you just brought to mind a great memory from a month or so ago. The best convenience store food item I've seen in years were I found in Vermont at a convenience store pickled green beans and pickled beets in little containers. What a great, super tasty, yes, salty, but healthy.
But fermented.
Yeah,
delicious.
Exactly. All that bacteria that went right into us as we were making our way to the mountains. So there's good innovation there. So you just mentioned, you know, signage or other ways to steer towards the healthy choice. And you told me that about a story that was nudge versus nudge. Can you tell the listeners about that?
Yeah, well, I'm originally from New York, so you know what a nudge is if you're from New York. It's being told what to do. Nudge is not knowing you're being told what to do, but you're supposedly making the decision on your own.
Yeah.
Well, probably the best example is looking at stores. There's one in the Midwest called Quick Trip. Quick Trip is spelled with a K, and they were the first convenience store to partner with PHA, and really that was our entree into what PHA was all about. They right now sell 520 pounds of bananas per store per day across their 500 stores, 520 pounds per day, which equates to about 1,200 bananas per store per day, or a banana every 86 seconds.
Crazy.
At a gas station.
Crazy.
And what started is they originally, when they came out with their banana program, bananas come in either 10-pound bags or 40-pound boxes. And they told their stores, you're getting a 40-pound box. And what happened the first couple weeks is they were only selling about 2 pounds. 38 pounds were going to the food bank or something like that, which is great for the food bank, but it's terrible for profits. And where it's even more terrible for is the manager compensation, because at most stores, your bonus, your compensation is all tied towards what you sell, plus you get penalized for what you throw out. And if you're throwing out 38 pounds of bananas, throwing out meaning not selling, That's a ding on your... So what was happening is...
Even though... Do convenience stores get tax incentives for donations to food banks?
They do, but also... Or it depends on how it works and in various other liabilities. But in this case, the store managers were you know, not happy because there goes a holiday bonus. And Kwik Trip made two smart decisions. And number one, they said, okay, we're going to shrink from your compensation. We'll reward you from what you sell, not what you don't sell. Number two, you're getting a 40-pound box tomorrow. So if you don't know how to sell bananas, figure out how to make banana bread, because it's coming. And they took that from a real commitment to their employees, to their customers, built it from 40 pounds a day to 100 to 200 to eventually 500. And now they're also known for baking potatoes, or known for apples, or known for onions, but it is a long-term process, and in that process it's going to be ugly for a while. You just have to be able to weather that, and that's the big thing in mitigating. How do you deal with food that may rot?
Right. And another thing that I learned from you was, you know, that not only do the stores have the opportunity to affect public health, but they also can affect environmental health in various ways. And here we're straying away from food for a moment, but food and environment are so closely linked. You know, if Starbucks is America's bathroom, you were saying that similarly, convenience stores are America's trash can, and that there's opportunity that you see to, you know, offer recycling or composting when we all empty our cars as we're pumping our gas. I thought that was exciting.
Well, it's all very related. It's the three big things going on right now: food, community, and anything related to jobs. And they all are interconnected, because if you have a passion about food and what you do with food, there's probably a community component, whether you're working with Feeding America or another group, or what is the whole sustainability. And in here in the D.C. area, it's amazing to see job titles are going from somebody who's a lobbyist to somebody who's a lobbyist plus sustainability or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's really built more into how organizations are thinking. The third component is jobs. And right now, unemployment's at 4%, maybe a little below 4%. And how do you differ in the job market? Are you selling the same items as anybody else? And particularly with younger workers, more so than anybody else, if you're doing something good, if you're doing something related to recycling, if you're doing something good related to changing the conversation on food, people will want to work for you. And that differentiates you. And so we are looking at things like, how can we recycle at the gas pump? Because we are immediate consumption. And we are, you get something now because I'm hungry, because I'm thirsty. And how do we collect that to minimize waste streams? It's a big issue, but just like food, it's some baby steps. And how do we advance?
So speaking of baby steps, I end every episode, and we're drawing near the end, with baby steps that the listeners can take. So I ask every guest that comes on Lunch Agenda for an action item. And this doesn't have to do anything with your work, or it can, but I'd love for each of you, Amaris and Jeff, to offer something our listeners can do in their day-to-day lives to help our food system get to where you think it needs to be.
Well, go ahead, with Jeff. Convenience stores, there's a couple. So I've been thinking about, is there a connection with convenience stores? The average convenience store, you're in and out in 3 minutes. It's really fast. And most people get what they got last time. It's habit. So how do you change habit? In our house, just thinking about our house, how we can not have food rot. What we have is above the fridge. We have all those fun items. And if you're hungry after late at night, you get one of those things. And they're not fresh items. Meanwhile, in the fridge, we have all the fresh items, but you don't think about opening that, and we don't have the fruit bowl because some of those items need to be refrigerated. So what I was thinking is, we just need to take a plastic orange or a plastic apple or something like that and stick it with all those savory snacks up top to remind us, fresh stuff 4 feet below, grab that.
That's
because
so
the fruit
funny.
Bowl isn't so obvious.
Only
so,
Jeff would think of this one.
So that's my nudge. Now I just need to find that fake apple or something like that and put that up there.
Oh, I should have. My daughter's kitchen has quite a few of those.
But you can only have them out when the fresh stuff's out there. So that's what I... Family, that's what we're going to start doing.
That's awesome. And that's reminding me of a little nudge that I've been doing at my house. which is very simple, but I'll just raise it in this context. When there's something like sliced turkey or even fresh sausages that could go bad, that usually would live in those two drawers at the bottom that are the cheese or deli or however you do it at your house, I've just started not keeping those in the drawers because out of sight, out of mind, and I know that my husband doesn't look in those drawers when he's thinking about what to cook. So small little nudges, I really like it. Thank you.
Ameris.
Yeah, exactly.
So mine goes back to voting with your wallet, because honestly, the only reason that our organization, PHA, can be successful in continuing to work with, you know, those companies which some might call the worst offenders, is because we find that sweet spot between what's good for the mission and what's good for business. So in order to keep those, you know, healthier reformulated product on the shelves, we have to make sure that consumers are buying them. So I would really just, you know, challenge and say to listeners, vote with your wallet and give, you know, these products, these companies a chance. You might be surprised. Like if we all find ourselves eating on the go. I mean, I'm a dietitian and I nearly always carry food on my person at every time, every moment. But we all find ourselves in a pinch sometimes when we need to go grab some food. Give convenience stores a chance. You might be surprised to find your favorite bar, your favorite sparkling water inside. And that honestly just helps support the work that we do and the case that we have to make to businesses that if you build it, they will come. If you stock it, it will move. So
it's such a good point, because the day in Vermont, I went right to the nut section because that's my safe place in the mm-hmm. convenience store. Whereas my friend did a nice scan of all the fridge case and found those green beans. Mm-hmm. So I buy right into what you're saying. Thank you.
Yeah.
So listeners who want to keep up with what Ameris and Jeff are doing can follow them on Twitter at Ameris Bradley, at Jeff Leonard. And I want to just give a plug for the future or the next episode of our series, or the future episodes, I should say, because there's one in between. But at the Partnership for Healthier America conference, the VP of marketing for Kellogg's specialty food division was talking about this notion of selling out versus selling in. And her point was that when a big company purchases a small company, we often think that the small company is sold out. I'm sure that most of the listeners can come up with examples in their mind. But her point was that it can have the opposite effect, and it can actually have the effect of bringing the positive practices of that smaller operator to a larger body. Her example was Sir Kensington's, which has come under the Unilever umbrella. So down the line in this series, we're going to be talking to Annie's Mac and Cheese, who was acquired by General Mills. And I just think that that's going to be a really nice case study of this concept. So if you're interested in this tension of the big versus the small and how they affect each other, stay tuned for that. And one more time before we close today, I want to ask the listeners that if you know about good work being done by big companies to impact how food comes from growing to our plates, please let me know. I'm heading to Iceland next week, so there are a couple weeks before our next episode, and I'd really love to dig into some of your ideas about companies doing it right and profile them in the last episode of this series. So DM me, contact me on my website, and I will be back to you in 2 weeks. Have a great day, and thanks for tuning into Lunch Agenda.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio.